welcome to EQ Above IQ, Parenting with Emotional Intelligence and Healing the Inner Child. My name is Trina Casey, and I'm your host. Thank you for joining me on this episode of EQ Above IQ, where I am trying to help parents learn how to reparent themselves in order to heal their inner child and to truly show up for their own kids. You got to heal before you can help heal. And though it is a process, and you should never stop trying, I never want to discourage people who are in their healing process to not heal people because you're not, quote unquote, 100% healed. Not going to happen, people. Let's just get real with it. But you can always add value and caring and compassion to others, no matter where you are in your healing journey. And that's what I think is the most important thing. Your intention, the education, the understanding, the compassion that you can have for another human being, it is a domino effect. And so I encourage all of you to take steps, no matter where you are in your healing journey, and try to reach out and show compassion and love, not just for the other person, but for yourself. Start with yourself. Like I said in the previous episode, start with yourself, in that when you start to truly love yourself, you'll want to go out and spread that to other people. So in this episode, I wanted to talk about slipping back, or I know there's an actual expression for that. But when I say slipping back, that means where you are in your journey, whether it's you're trying to lose weight, whether you're trying to heal a relationship, whether you're trying to heal yourself, I want you to realize that slipping back is a normal part of the process. It takes time to create new habits and even new perspectives. A lot of the times, our biases are subconscious. And a lot of people don't know they're perpetuating it, whatever they're doing. They don't know, they don't realize that they have slipped back, because we live in a pretty narcissistic society. So, and one of the key elements of narcissism, they cannot see what they're doing. They cannot see that their behavior is harmful to others. They cannot see that they're a narcissist. And when I define narcissist, as most psychologists do, it is a lack of concern for others, emotions, feelings, taking very selfish actions, and having a hard time having accountability for those things, and being rather manipulative in that process, even if they do apologize. It's usually into reference of some personal gain. So we all know that person. If you are aware that you are being that person, you're most not likely a narcissist. That is another completely different diagnosis, and I'm not going to get into that. I am a cognitive behavioral therapy coach. I am not a clinical therapist, though I probably studied just as much. I just have a hard time with the educational hierarchy and structure in itself. So I am intrinsically motivated to learn and to apply all that I learn in the most healthiest and productive and helpful way. I've always been somebody's coach, or I've always been somebody's counselor from a very young age. And I'm rather empathic as well. So I really vibe people's energy and emotions. And so it's a gift, and it's also a curse sometimes, because I tend to feel what everyone is feeling. But having the self-awareness that I do now, I can truly understand what is mine and what is the other person's. And so it really is the reason why I'm an effective coach. I've found different ways and different modalities in order to keep myself engaged. And that's part of the reason why I became a coach rather than a clinical psychologist, because there are certain boxes or guidelines that a psychologist or psychiatrist has to stay within due to legal reasons and quote unquote ethical reasons. So being in the coaching realm that I am it allows me more freedom to really dig deep and help in maybe a way that a clinical psychologist couldn't do because of those constraints around the licensing and what can be said and what cannot be said. When you come to a coach, and especially if you come to a coach like me, you're getting the real deal. And of course, that sometimes will create some discomfort, but having discomfort is a part of the journey. And having discomfort is a part of building resilience. And sometimes that's the only way that you'll actually make the shifts that you do. You know, that discomfort, to be in it, to embrace it, to understand where it's coming from. Yeah, that's why I coach and I learn all that I do to facilitate that and the best way to heal. And what I really appreciate about this profession, or it's a calling, is that it allows me to be a co-regulator and a co-captain in your healing process. And it actually does a lot for my own self as well. You know, I used to always tell my English students, when I remind you, I remind myself. And sometimes to get that pearl of wisdom that you know is going to help yourself, you sometimes have to go and tell somebody else about it. And then it all of a sudden it triggers the memory or the response that you need to truly embed it. One of the things about cognitive behavioral therapy that I absolutely love is the journaling piece and to bring the awareness of internal conflict and self-talk to overwrite processes or how you think about things, to bring that to light in order for you to overwrite it. So, you know, you write down what's going on in your emotions, you discover what your triggers are, and you dig underneath that emotion to really get to why you're feeling it, what happened to make you feel inadequate, to make you feel fearful, to make you feel all of the emotions, even happiness and joy. What is it about that emotion, and what makes it tangible for you? You know, what makes it real for you? And so it's a really satisfying journey that I have been on, and I get so much joy from doing it. So if you're interested, please go to thisreallifebooks.com and click on that coaching tab, and let's have a conversation to see if we're a good fit. That's a really important piece as well. So yeah, I just went on like a tangent there. I didn't mean to get it all into the whole coaching piece, but I think it was relative. So one of the things that I really want to go back to is that healing process doesn't have to happen just because you don't feel that you're healed. That imposter syndrome rears its ugly head when you think you can't help others because you're not perfect. You'll never get to a place of perfection, and you shouldn't be showing your kids that's what you're striving for either. I have often told you guys on this podcast that I have to apologize to my son sometimes, and because, like I said, I have PMDD, and that sometimes does not bring out the best version of myself. I'm a little bit more impatient. My facial expression may not be showing joy. And I'll be telling you the honest truth. You've seen my Insta pages. I smile, but I'm not one of those. I can't even, you know, I'm a very authentic person, I'd like to say, because I can't fake joy, and I don't fake sadness. I don't fake anything. I just try to be as honest and upfront with where I am and as transparent as possible. And sometimes that will push up against other people, especially on a cultural level. But it's okay, because what I have found, and that even though through all these trying variables, I have a true sense of self-worth and love for myself. And the truth is, when I reflect on my childhood and when I reflect on my journey, I think I always did. I had those people in my lives that planted doubt, and I let that doubt stop me from pursuing many of my dreams until a much later age. And then you sit back and go, why did I wait so long? You know, but it's okay. You know, time is relative. And I love reading the stories of people who are in their 60s or 70s, and they went back and got the degree they wanted. And I'm not promoting that is so important. I'm just saying they went back and got the knowledge and the feeling of inner approval that they wanted, meaning if they had a dream that going out and becoming a doctor, but couldn't afford it or couldn't get the support that they needed or whatever, and they found the motivation to go out and do that, and they did it. Ugh, I love those stories. I love those stories because they resonate with me in so many ways. And so don't think your life experience doesn't hold value in this world. I don't care what it is. Your life experience is being seen by somebody that you don't even know is watching. Kind of creepy, huh? You could be stalked right now. But my point is that stay consistent with your purpose and stay consistent with who you are. Don't mold and try to change yourself to fit somebody else's ideal of success, of beauty, of many things. I mean, how we morph and bend and twist. I mean, I think about the plastic surgery industry, and I am not downing people who want to go under the knife to get rearranged, changed, or whatever, but it's a sad thing for me to see beautiful people inside and out cutting themselves up, paying tons of money to change who they are. I mean, now, it's a little bit different, I think, for the trans community because they were already forced into like this box of what to look like and things like that. So if they feel like they want to take hormones and stuff like that to develop breasts, to, you know, do the physical changes via surgery, I am not knocking that at all. I don't know how they afford it, but I'm always like kind of impressed. I'm like, whoa, look at that. But sometimes I feel like it perpetuates an ideal of what beauty is that's not the same for everyone. I think that we see people who go under the knife kind of be this doll or be this actually patriarchal kind of version of what beauty is. You know, what their guidelines are, you know. Teeny tiny ways, fake boobs, maybe add a butt here and there. That one I find very interesting because as a person in the community of color, there were very harsh judgments around our body type for a very long time. But when other people of different races went out and started getting surgery to look like our body type, that tells you a lot. You know, I took my dog to the vet. And I was talking to her about the changes I wanted to see in the world and life. I don't even know how we got on the subject, to tell you the truth. And I told her, I said, you know, one of the biggest and the most important things I think that will solve the race relations problem or the conflict or the division is for Caucasians in particular to really start loving themselves and stop being so afraid. I get that there's this long history of oppression that has been perpetuated, but I think that at the end of the day, if people of color wanted to do the same to you, there would have been a lot more organization towards that. And so I think sometimes the supremacy that you're trying to hold on to, you're working too hard for, and is not necessary. You know, you're trying too hard to hold on. And what happens if you squeeze something? It goes through your fingers anyway. You're like trying to squeeze water, it goes through your fingers. You're trying to squeeze skin, you'll see, you know, it puckers between your fingers. It's too much, and it's definitely painful. So here is what I feel is the solution. Stop trying to control others, people, and just start loving yourself. Start regulating yourself and let the universe take care of everything else, because it's a flow. It's a connection. So it was just a short little episode. This came to my mind, and I thought that it was important to share, as all of these things are changing in the United States and all over the world. So I truly do hope you all seek the help that you need. And if you need help, you can reach out at thisreallifebooks.com. Click on the coaching tab. If you want some beautiful books, click on the coaching tab. Go to my Instagram for access to all of those things. And click the link in the bio at thisreallifebooks. We always have underscore in between. And I hope you have a blessed day.